Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. We hope that your 2018 is off to a wonderful start, and sincerely thank you for tuning in today and joining us on the show. Today, we have with us Julian Adler. Julian is a serial entrepreneur and has spent over 30 years building and sustaining a range of companies, from an autonomous college painting business to a multi-million dollar international software development firm. In addition to the firm, Julian is both a co-founder and chairman of Albion Angel Investments and a managing partner of UPL Enterprises, a real estate firm managing multi-unit properties for underserved populations such as veterans and people with disabilities. Julian also serves as an executive coach and leadership trainer to professionals at large companies such as Google, Sony, NASA, Netflix, HP, as well as an array of startups and solo entrepreneurs. A student of architecture at Kent University, and with a background in psychology, hypnosis, and neurolinguistic programming, Julian is a member of the American Board of Hypnotherapists and a lifetime member with the International Association of Behavioral Therapists. Thank you so much for joining us today, Julian.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
It's so great to have you on. So a little background, Julian had actually joined us on the show back when the show first started a couple years ago and has been my personal consultant and business coach for many years. And so any opportunity that I have to have him on the show and share all of the amazing wisdom that he's taught me over the last 4 or 5 years that he's been my personal coach, I'm so excited to share. And Julian, I think this subject today is such a appropriate topic given what's going on in the world about money and how no matter what, I mean, I've had many experts on the show talking about redirecting your career, writing resumes, interviewing. But the thing that I think we haven't spent a lot of time on is how do you make a lot of money and what stops us from doing that?
I think it's a fascinating subject. I think a lot of people think that making more money is going to solve their issues. But what's required is basically a clear understanding of yourself coupled with the knowledge of how to build firm financial structures. So I think that the important part is that we're talking about how we relate to this concept of money is as important as the type of job you get.
Yeah, I think so. I think that a lot of people out there, for example, they might say they want to make XYZ amount of money, and the amount of money that they're asking for really, in my experience, directly correlates to what they think they're worth. And I see so many people out there who can't break the six-figure barrier, let alone make more than minimum wage in some cases. And I would love to know your two cents on this. How directly does that correlate to what that person thinks or feels about themselves or to their family ties or what they were taught about money growing up?
Oh, it's completely connected. It's directly connected. When I start working with somebody, I usually ask them the question, how much equals wealth for you? What's the number that you think that you're worth? And to write that down, and what number do you think would be significantly wealthy? And, It's interesting to see people's reactions to this. There's a big difference between money and finance. Money is the stuff you carry in your pocket, and finance is, numbers that you move around on a spreadsheet. Most people conflate all these things together, and they think that just because they have a dream to have a certain amount of money that they can have that. They really only can have what their family system and their psychology will allow them to have.
So tell me a little bit about that. Are you talking about when you say family psychology, their subconscious mind, their environment, how they were brought up in the conversations around money?
It's really all of the above. It's everything that we experience, both what's programmed into us from our family system and the experiences that we have. The large part of this is basically how the mind works. And this is just my viewpoint on how I work with my clients, but I basically break the mind into three sections. You've got your reptilian brain, which is concerned with, safety, procreating and having a roof over one's head and staying away from physical danger. And then there's this mid part of the brain, which they call the limbic system or the neolimbic cortex. And that is concerned with the seeking of pleasure, the avoidance of pain. It's where, you know, we're looking for emotional bonding and that sort of thing. And then you've got your, what you think of as you, the prefrontal cortex, your thinking mind, which is dealing with abstract thought and languages and concepts around money. But what's interesting is that the majority of our mind is geared towards safety. And safety pretty much equates to a couple things. The critter brain or the reptilian brain is looking for physical safety. The neolimbic cortex is looking for two forms of safety primarily. And one of them I term as you are like me. We're looking for similarities between people. If you look like me, you sound like me, you act like me. If some danger would befall us, you would probably protect me or at least come to my aid or join me in protecting the group that we're in. The other form, which is equally as interesting, is I have survived this before. Hmm. Anything that we have survived, whether it's in our family system or us personally, is coded as safe. You know you can survive it again. And the more times, of course, you have that experience, the more you can survive it. So this is what people don't think about. They have this concept of money, but when it really comes down to it, we're more or less programmed to be able to accept a certain amount of value for ourselves. And of course, that can be changed, and that's what I do with the people I work with. But we do have a certain number that we will allow ourselves to have just because we know it was accepted in our family system.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate with you for a moment. Let's say, hypothetically, sure. You hear these rags to riches stories. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but even my own parents were blue collar workers. My mom was, you know, a nurse. My father was a firefighter. And I remember the first time that I made more than both of them combined. And it was uncomfortable in the family system. But how, without this knowledge, how do you move through that? How do some of these people who maybe start off with dirt poor, nothing to speak for, and then they go on to make millions of dollars? How does that come to be without this sort of education or reprogramming?
Well, it doesn't really. It happens from reprogramming. Some people, for example, who may like a sport person who they're young and they're very good at sports, but their family doesn't have a lot of money. They, you know, are very good at what they do. They get a professional contract, and the professional contract comes with a lot of zeros. These people don't know what they're doing with it. And a lot of them do spend a lot of money. They don't get out of the habit of that, and they will divest themselves of all the money they have because, frankly, it's just not safe to have it. Other mm-hmm. people get smart. They hire people around them to take care of them. They hire a financial manager, you know, a really good accountant, a good lawyer. And these people basically say, hey, that's a lot of money. Why don't we manage this for you? We'll give you an allowance. And then over time, it becomes safe to have that money. They cannot just go ahead and willy-nilly spend it on this, that, and the other thing. Most people will divest themselves of the money that they have if it's not safe for them to have it.
Okay, I think I understand where you're coming from. So if I'm hearing you correctly, what I'm hearing is any one of us could go walk out the door, win $1 million, have a windfall of money fall upon us, even from, God forbid, somebody we love passing away. But if we're not set up or programmed to be able to responsibly own that we're worth that amount of money or that it's safe for us to have it, then, as you said, we'll divest ourselves of that money in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. In fact, I have a client that comes to mind. It's a client that I had before I moved out to California, and she was starting her own business, and she was doing consultancies for big telecommunication companies. So she was going in and helping them with their management team. So she was doing some sort of coaching. And, you know, her family system, I don't think anybody in her family made above $100,000. And here she is going into a business where, you know, she was making $500,000 to $1 million a year personally. And her business, which she had like 5 or 6 employees at the time, I think was totaling around, hovered around about $16 million a year or something like that. And she did absolutely everything that she could subconsciously to divest herself of that money. She bought a big house, and then she bought a second house, and she bought 4 cars. Literally 4 cars. She had 2 cars for each of these houses that she had. It was just craziness. And she eventually overextended herself and had to restructure everything. And that's when she found me. And so my job was to help her reprogram and to accept this money that she, you know, she's worth this amount of money. And after working together for about 6 months, not only did she, you know, right align things, but you know, her business right now is worth somewhere around, you know, $35 million. And she's moved around from telecommunications to something else, but she's still doing the same job. And her business has grown quite a bit, and she sees it very easy holding on and growing her money.
And so one of the things I know you and I have personally worked on that I would love to just share a little bit with the people tuning in today is the money biography. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that might be a good tool for people to start to utilize to assess where there might be limitations around their subconscious relationship to money?
Oh, absolutely. If you don't mind, I'd like to start with an exercise that I think is actually precedes that.
Okay,
and then I get into the money biography, if you don't mind. I do a mental exercise with some of my clients that that basically I have them focus on their thoughts. I have them focus on how they feel physically. And we do this little mental exercise where I tell them, imagine if I just gave you $1,000 right now and you have 24 hours to spend that amount of money on yourself. What do you spend it on? And they reply to me what they spend it on and so on and so forth. I said, great. So imagine that tomorrow I give you another $1,000. What do you spend that on? And again, they're paying attention to how they feel, and they pay attention to what they're thinking. And then I say, well, what if I did that for a month? What if I gave you $1,000 every month that you had to spend? And each day I gave you $1,000, and you had to spend it by the end of the day. What would you spend it on? How do you feel about that? What's going on in you? And then, of course, we extend it to a year. If you're given $1,000 every day for a whole year to spend on yourself, what would you spend it on? So when you think of these questions, do you feel any different than you would normally when you think about the money that you're making? And if it is different, how so? And do you think that as you're making, got these $1,000, $365,000 coming to you every day, having to spend it by the end of the day, do you think people think about you a little bit differently? Do you relate to people the same way or different? Do you have more friends or fewer friends? How is this money changing your life? And I get them to think about that thing first. I have run across very few people who could very much categorize exactly what they're going to spend $1,000 a day by the end of the day, every day on.
Louis Vuitton?
You can do that for a little while.
I'm just kidding.
Pardon?
I said Louis Vuitton's a pair of shoes if you're a girl every day.
Sure. But I don't know what you're going to do with 365 pairs of shoes.
That's going to be probably.
There comes a point in time when you sort of feel faded and you're like, I've got all the things I want. What do I spend this money on now? And it's hard to do. It's a hard thing. People think it's easy, but go ahead. Try 365 different days. What would you spend $1,000 on every day? It begins to, you say, well, I can put it in my 401k and my, or my SEP plan, or I could do this or I could do that with it. I could, move it over here. I could invest in Bitcoin and so on and so forth. But it really is difficult to think about, let's say that investments were off the table. What would you spend it on physically? And so people have a lot of difficulty with this particular exercise. And so what I did is I basically said, well, if this is a challenging thing for you, then there's some principles of the mind and the way we view money that you may want to look at. And one of them is, what you think about expands. If you think that you're worth $1 million and you really, on every cell of your body, thinks that, then you may be. But you only can have what's safe for you, as I mentioned. In the majority of your mind, 95 or so percent of your mental activity, I don't know what the number is, but it's a large percentage of your mental activity is concerned around safety, things that you're familiar with. The third principle about this is whatever you think is the absolute truth for you is, what you create. It's what you have. Your absolute truth is what you've experienced in your life. And the last thing is a thought is eternal until it's unthought. Thoughts don't just change unless you choose or purposely choose to change them. So I came up with this money biography to help a person see the stories that they have around money. And this is the thing that you and I have worked on, and I think it's a tremendously interesting tool. And it's a very simple tool. You just get a spreadsheet. You have three columns in that spreadsheet, and you're basically putting down, the age that you were, an event that happened that had to do around some sort of transaction, whether it be financial or a trade or acquisition. Of course, when we're little, we're 2 years old or 3 years old, and we have toys and we're sharing with our friends or so on and so forth, it doesn't come down to money, but it does come down to, transactions. And then you write your emotional and mental response to it. So each column one is for age, column two is the event, and column three is your mental and or emotional action or reaction to it. And you just start, basically doing a biography of all these different transactions. And over time, you're going to be able to see a pattern to how you deal with transactions. And of course, that equates directly to money. A transaction could be time. It could be a transactional emotion, or it could be something that's financial. It could be a bunch of different things, but it all equates to how we view prosperity or finances or what have you. And then you will see very, very quickly that as you're going through with different ages, that there's going to be a similar story or many, many stories that are repeated and reinforced throughout your life.
Yeah, I remember when you and I did it, one of the things that stuck out to me is that there was a lot of guilt around having money, is that, the haves and the have-nots, and that I felt very embarrassed when people would say that my parents were rich, because they really weren't. They just worked their butts off and built their dream house, but they worked every day and still work every day to pay for it. And I just remember feeling this immense guilt when all my friends as a child would say, oh, your parents are rich. And I would immediately defend them and say, no, they're just hardworking. And so I could easily see where that correlated, where for me, at least, one of my family stories was that you're not rich. You have to work hard, and then that equals money.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the most insidious little beliefs that we have, is money equals hard work, because there's only so much work a person can do. So there's a limit to the amount of money they can make, right? If you think that you can, if you're getting paid $20 an hour or whatever it is, and you can work 40 hours a week, and maybe you can work 80 hours a week, so maybe you can double that $20 an hour, and then can you work 60 hours? Can you work 80 hours a week? Can you work 100 hours a week? And it comes a point in time, there's only 168 hours in a week, that you're going to run out of hours. So then there's a limitation, what you think you're worth, to that amount of time you can work, and that's the amount of money you can make, period. Of course, there's lots of people out there making a lot more money than that. And a lot of them are, making millions of dollars a year. Are they really working that hard to make that $1 million a year? I would say no, they're probably working very smart, and they have other people working with them, and so on and so forth. But that's a huge limitation on what someone can do.
Yeah, I remember for me, when I first got into the business world, I always thought that, the harder I worked, the more it would correlate or translate to more money in my pocket. Now, I've always been in a commission-driven world, even before I owned my own company, of being in sales. And that's a really fascinating chance to actually see what you think you value and put it to the test, because you get to say, how much, and it doesn't have to be hard work. Like, you could work smart, not hard. And the more I started to realize that I didn't have to make 100 calls in a day, but I could make 10 smart calls in a day and be less stressed and more peaceful and more happy, and then have more productivity and abundance out of those 10 calls, the easier life became, and it was less stressful, I would say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you will over time, and that's a beautiful example. It's actually a perfect example. You have this belief, and then you test that belief out. You put it out there in the world, and you see if it works. And then you find out, this doesn't work so well. And then you make a modification, and you find that modification works. That's, behavior modification is done over time. It's what you're doing is you're slowly, incrementally creating safety where safety wasn't there before. So this whole story about money equals hard work starts to erode and starts to dissipate a bit, and it allows you to make more money. Because, you're just worth more money. You're working smarter, so you can have more money, you see. It's a very interesting thing. And then I add two more columns to that spreadsheet. Remember, the first column is the age. The second column is the event. The third column is the emotional mental reaction. And then I add two more columns. One is positive conditioning, and one's negative conditioning. And I take a look at every event, and I ask myself, what was the conditioning here? What was the belief here that that's going on? Or what was being programmed into me, or what could be programmed into me. Now, of course, this isn't an exact science, but what you do start to see are trends, the trends of thinking. And if one finds that they've got a trend of thinking, all they've got to do is change it. And you can change it by a variety of different things. People sometimes use affirmations, because every time you say something, you're more or less reprogramming your mind. The more times you say it, the more of a belief there will be. So you can develop a prosperity consciousness, if you will, or at least a mindset, just on affirmations alone. And I know affirmations seem kind of woo-woo and cheesy. However, every time you say something, you're reprogramming yourself. The most important reprogramming tool that we have, at least in coaching, is what we call a reframe. But that's simply, if we have a thought and we hear that thought, we cancel that. We do what's called a break state, and it gets the mind's attention, and then we change it. So there was a time in which I found myself saying, I have too much on my plate, not enough time to get everything I've done. This was my reframe. You know, and my girlfriend would say all the time, you say that a lot. And one time I actually heard her and I said, whoa, goodness, I guess I do say that a lot. And I asked myself, well, where did that come from? And immediately I could hear my father saying it. He said that all the time. That was his, that was his reframe. It still is his reframe, in fact. He's not likely to change it either. But the reframe, so every time I said it, I literally said cancel, cancel. Because how often in life do you say the words cancel, cancel, right? It's, you don't use them together very often. So it gets your mind's attention. And then I rephrased that thought to, I have plenty of time to get anything I want done.
Hmm.
And so every time I came and encountered that thought again, I would say, cancel, cancel. And I reframed it. I gave it a different belief. And you do that often enough, and the brain will, of course, replace one belief to the next. I haven't said it in years, except to give it as an example.
Yeah, you're totally right. I remember when I first started my business, I thought that it was so important for people to know I was busy. And every conversation I had, I was busy, but busy didn't equate to money or to prosperity. It just equated to time spent. And so
yes, exactly.
Finally, after like 7 or 8 phone calls with everybody starting the phone call of, Jennifer, I know how busy you are. And I was like, wait a second, what am I putting out there? That's not what I'm committed to. And so same thing, is instead of saying cancel, cancel, I just reframed it. And I started having conversations and shifted that one sentence of how busy I was to, things are going amazing and effortless and easily, and it's just all working out really seamlessly. And then things are just, you know, money is pouring in. It's funny, one of the women I work with said something brilliant recently. She said, my money channel is open. And that was her mantra the whole month of December. And by God, she killed it. She tripled any number she had ever done before and is going to get the biggest commission check of her life. And it just started with a simple affirmation of, my money channel is open.
It just works. You know, it's not this, and I like some of these tools because they're simple yet effective, right? They don't require a lot of steps. They're just very, very easy. I just challenge anybody to take a phrase. Any phrase, you know, making money is easy. You know, maybe just that alone, and say that nonstop every day, like a mantra all day long for a month, as often as you can think about and remember yourself to do it, and just see the difference that makes in your life. Now, you can't obviously predict what's going to come of that, but you will see a change, not only in your attitude around money, but people's attitude around you and money.
Yeah, and the reverse is true as well. I notice so often I Uber pretty much everywhere, and I'm always engaging in dialogues with my Uber drivers about why they Uber and what did they do before and do they enjoy it. And about 50% of the people who drive me around hate it. They're not happy. And they say things like, oh, it's so hard and I can't get anything else and I just need the money, but even this doesn't pay well. And if they're open to it, I immediately say, oh, you know, can I ask you a question about that? And then we engage in a conversation about what would it look like if, instead of saying it was hard and impossible to make the money they needed to make ends meet, that it was easy and effortless and that they would find their dream job by the end of this year. And it's just shifting that perspective and that context, which makes all the difference.
It really does, shifting the perspective and also knowing what you want. There's many, many, many layers to wants, right? Some wants are basically wants that we get because we, quote unquote, should do something or need to do something or have to do something. It's the beginning of the year. I should make an effort to go to the gym more often. That's not a real want. I call those, you know, obviously shoulds, and we don't want to should all over ourselves. But the these are somebody else's wants or societal wants that we ought to be adhering if we want to be part of the family system here of the planet. However, there's other wants that, you know, we could say, well, there must be another want underneath that, because that's a strategy. You know, that's a strategy. Going to the gym is a strategy for what? Well, the best way for me to figure out what the core wants are, or maybe the bedrock wants, is to simply ask the question, well, what will having that do for me? And you might say, well, that'll put me into good shape. Okay, great. Well, what will be in good shape do for me? What will allow me to do A, B, or C? And you can just keep going until you can't answer that question anymore. You hit a roadblock. Well, that's what you want. The challenge with money is very abstract as far as the concept is concerned. I mean, even the notes that we have in our pocket are built on faith. They're not, you know, part of a gold standard or anything. They're just notes. They're just a piece of paper. So they're although real, they're still an abstract concept. And a lot of people tell me, well, I want to make a lot of money. Well, making money is actually a strategy. That strategy for something else. That strategy could be for security. That strategy could be for, you know, belongings, or like, you know, you want to have a good home, or you want to be able to travel, or, you know, all these other things. But, you know, money is just is a strategy to get other things. And if you look at money and attempt to go after money, you're trying to manifest or actualize a strategy which is kind of weak, and it's certainly not long lasting. However, if you figured out what your wants were, and those wants were for, you know, a certain amount of security or love or belonging or whatever they may be, you can resolve those really easily. Sometimes you don't even need money for those things. But understanding what your wants are, and then understanding what's keeping you from getting in the, you know, getting in the, you know, what's in the way of the wants inside yourself, almost immediately you start seeing yourself actualizing the things you want.
I totally agree. And the other thing I know personally that at least I've noticed is that if we say something like, I want a lot of money, or in some cases, many cases, people I've spoken with from all around the world will say, I just want enough to pay my bills. And it goes back to that old adage of be careful what you wish for, because it's exactly what you want. Yeah. So a lot of money or just enough to pay your bills could be the exact same amount of money, because you're not specific about what it is, or to your point, clear on what the underlying desire or want is. And it's funny, last week we had had on the show Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, some of the people from that movie, and it ties back into Napoleon Hill's principles from over 100 years ago of being clear on what it is you desire, because otherwise without that clarity, it's just this ambiguous, obscure hope that kind of exists out there somewhere.
Exactly. And think about this too. If you're attempting to manifest a strategy, that strategy could be non-safe for you. However, the want that is informing that strategy could be very safe for you. And so if you're looking at that strategy and that strategy alone to satisfy that want, well, and you've got a blockage to it, you're not going to have the want satisfied ever until you recognize what the want is and the fact that perhaps there are many different ways that want can be satisfied aside from the money.
What I find
is when you figure out what you want and you're very clear on it, there's lots of different ways for you to satisfy it. And what's the ironic thing is that once money's not the strategy anymore to get the things that you want, you tend to get a lot of money. You tend to attract it.
Why do you say that?
Because it's not the focus. The strategy is no longer the focus. So you take a lot of pressure off of you. And you start focusing on the things that you want. And sometimes the things that you want require money. But if you're focused on the want, then it's not about your value as a human being or how much money you can earn or how much money you're allowed to have based on the family system. It's more emphasis is placed on the want itself. And so you end up, you know, freeing yourself of this, you know, value-based challenge of your psychology.
It's so funny, Jules, because I forgot that there was something that happened for me very much like this back in about 2012, the first time I was going to Africa. I don't know if you've ever heard of Emirates, but Emirates is this airline that's supposed to be the creme de la creme, and it flies to Dubai. And that's how I was really clear that no matter what it looked like, somehow or another, I was going to fly Emirates business class to Africa and would stop in Dubai. And I priced it out. I looked at it and it was going to be an exorbitant amount, more than I would have ever spent on a plane ticket, like $10,000 to fly business class round trip to Cape Town and back. And I just started having conversations. For about 3 months, my entire trip to Africa was booked. And I would tell anybody who would listen, I am going to Africa. I don't know what it's going to look like. We'll figure out a way to come up with the money if need be, but I'm creating that some sort of solution is going to present itself for me to fly business class on Emirates to Africa. And so this conversation just kept existing. I was a month out from my trip, still hadn't booked my airfare. Out of the blue, an email comes in that should have gone to my junk from one credit card that I forgot I had laying around. And it says, we just partnered with Emirates. And I think to myself, no, this couldn't be possible. And so I call that credit card with that airline that I had this random amount of miles with. And I said, I just am curious. I saw that you partnered with Emirates. You know, any chance, like how much would it cost if I wanted to fly business class round trip from LAX to Dubai down to Cape Town and back? Julian, do you want to know how much it was?
Yeah, I'd love to know.
$134. So
that's an amazingly low amount of money for that airline.
Yeah, well, it was because I had had some points, and just because they had just partnered, they were running the special promotion. But I share that story because what you're saying is I was attached to the strategy before. So before that, I was attached to the strategy of, oh, I need $10,000 to fly there. But when I let go of how that was going to look, and I was just open and just put it out there and had conversations that there was going to be a workable way that might not cost $10,000, all of a sudden, this miraculous solution appeared before me.
Yeah, what is always more important than how? Somehow, how figures itself out. You know, getting very clear on the what is the first part, and then getting clear on what's keeping you from getting to that what is the second step, and that's really where that money biography came into play. I've used it for many years now, and it's one of the most interesting forms of mental clarity that I've run across. And I had a lot of difficulty doing this myself. I worked with a woman once who suggested this a while back, that I do this sort of thing. And I was really stumped. I was like, well, I can't remember my whole life and all transactions. And she's like, well, just give it the best go. Right? I don't know. I mean, God, as you said, you know, I've had 30 years experience here, which makes me somewhat, you know, moving on to the other side of midlife. And, you know, I was like, I can't remember when I was two or three. But like, my goodness, I can barely remember what I had for lunch yesterday. But I went and did it, and I started, and I remembered a few small things, like my father, when we asked him for an allowance. My brother, my sister, myself, we got together, we came up with a strategy. We're like, okay, we haven't had an allowance. You know, I'm probably 13, 14, and I had an allowance. We worked with my father. He's an entrepreneur himself. But so we wanted an allowance because all our friends were buying things, and we weren't able to because we had no money. And so he made us feel so guilty for asking for an allowance that we gave up on the pursuit. And I remember that like it was yesterday. And I remember many times in my life after that, I was afraid for asking what I want because I didn't want to be rejected like that again. And it had such a strong impression upon me that I kept myself from making a good deal of money. In fact, I had, like as you said, a software company and an IT company. Well, during that time, I had both those companies. I was making more money than I thought my family system was a party to. And I was doing everything I possibly could to divest myself of that funds. And then when I came to this recognition that, oh, wait a minute, I'm afraid to ask for money because there's something bad about doing that or talking about money because it's bad about doing that. And I started reframing that. My financial landscape changed wildly.
It's so true. It all comes down to perspective. I remember one of the most helpful things that you taught me back when we first started working together was a neuro-linguistic programming idea that at any moment we have these billions of bits of information bombarding us, but really we're only paying attention to a couple thousand or maybe it was a couple hundred of those bits. And I can see how that analogy would relate or that technology would relate to this, where if you're brought up in a family system, even if you are surrounded by abundance, prosperity, or there's all these things, but when you're little, something happens, you're going to look for the things that validate those couple hundred bits of information that say that you're going to fail, you'll never make a lot of money, or it's bad to make a lot of money.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that I'm glad you brought that up because that's exactly what's going on in that subconscious mind. You have a family system that has taught you certain truths. Well, we'll put quotes around truth, but it's a certain experience that is true for the family, right? And so you, in order to maintain adherence to your family system, which is a very strong subconscious desire, it's in fact, it's a need more than a desire, you'll look for opportunities to underscore or reinforce that belief so that you can maintain connection with your family system. I remember when I bought a Range Rover Sport, which was the first, you know, they were created. And I've always wanted one. The moment I heard about it, you know, because I used to have a Land Rover Discovery, which was a wonderful car. I loved that too. But I was, when I first saw that they were going to put out this Sport, and this looked really cool. It was a Range Rover Sport. And it just meant wealth to me at that time. And I bought this vehicle. I was so proud of it. And I came home to show it off to my family. The reaction I received from that was underwhelming to say the least.
Yeah.
I thought they're gonna be like, oh wow, you've made it. Good on you, Julian. Good on you. And they were basically the opposite of that. Well, why spend so much money on this car? It's a waste. You could be, you know, driving this other vehicle, which is a lot less expensive. And so it's just, you know, not only did they take the wind out of my sails, but I found myself attempting to justify it, which is even worse. You know, and I caught myself doing that, and I just reminded myself, well, it's okay for me to belong to the ideals of my family system and to stretch and have my own, thereby extending my family system. So I made a choice rather than to, a conscious choice, rather than to just subconsciously adhere to the family system no matter what. I told myself and I reminded myself constantly with an affirmation that it's okay for me to belong to the family system and stretch it.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to do it. I know another technique I personally used when we were in the midst of working on the money biography is once you identify some of the beliefs that perhaps inhibit you from being able to make the amount of money that you want is EFT or tapping, which is a scientifically proven way to eliminate, or you could probably say it better than I could because you're the one who taught it to me, but to negative beliefs, correct?
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful thing, and it just works. It seems weird and odd and everything, but it actually has a lot of value. It's one of the very few tools that I have in my tool system that I give to just about every one of my clients. It can remove not only thought process, processes, but it also can remove the emotional component that's also connected to that. Because you can imagine just having a thought that limits you is one thing, but having a thought coupled with emotions, that's a completely different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's great videos if anybody out there is thinking to themselves they might want to look into this. You kind of write down a list of any beliefs or systems of beliefs that disempower you, and maybe you get them from your money biography. And there are great videos out there on YouTube that show you how to tap and how to utilize EFT to help release that. And I think I've had a lot more peace around money and less stress since I started using those techniques.
Well, I think, and I would agree with that. And I think that for you personally, once you illuminated that there was a pattern and that pattern was keeping you from being free, that you were somehow adhering to this belief and that you had, quote unquote, no choice in it. The independent part of you just basically said, no, I'm not going to sit for this. I'm changing that because I want to be free. I want my own thoughts. I want what I want, not what other people think I ought to have or what I'm worth. And I noticed that when you did that, there was a definite difference in your relationship to not only money, but prosperity, wealth, and these other concepts. You changed it across the board.
Yeah, and I owe you a big thank you. And I'm so grateful that you were able to join us on the show today and to share all these invaluable tips and tools and sharing about the money biography and how people can utilize it at home for themselves to help create greater prosperity. So I want to be sure, though, Julian, that people can find information about you and about the services that you provide. Where would people find information about your services if they wanted to work with you?
Well, they're welcome to go to my website, info or julianadler.com, julianadler.com. It's embarrassingly old, that website. I'm in the process of making a new one. And now that I've put it out there on the airwaves, I actually have to follow through and complete it. Something has been on the back burner because I've got all these other projects that take advantage of my time rather than my own stuff. That's probably the best way to do it. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. And if you ever just want to reach out to me, you're welcome to email me at info@julianadler.com.
Perfect. And if you had it all your way, what would be one or two things that you would love our listeners to take away from today's show?
Well, the main thing that I think is important is you change your mind, you change your life. And in order to be able to change your mind, you must get clear. There's a variety of tools out there that can help you. And any one of these tools could potentially work for you. But without that clarity, what can you do? So get clear and change your mind. And, your life is going to be a much different, a much better place.
That's amazing. Well, thank you again for joining us on the show today. Tune in next week. We have 14-year-old social activist and author Hannah Alper on the show. I'm excited to talk to her about how someone at 14 years old already begins to dip their toe in the water of what they want their life to look like. I think that what it means to have a job you love and the landscape of that, not only here in the United States, but around the world, is starting to shift. And I'm excited to talk to Hannah about that on the show next week. So you can always find any episode of the show after the show on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We invite you to like us on Facebook on the Get Yourself the Job Facebook page, as well as leave us any ratings, feedback that you might have. Or you can also find the archive of the show immediately following the show on the LA Talk Radio website. So thank you so much for tuning in today, and have a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.